Hello, everyone. My name is Philip Clayton. Welcome to another episode of the podcast, Conversations for a Life Economy. This series is brought to you by the British charity Reboot the Future and by the Institute for Ecological Civilization, ecociv.org. The most universal ethical principle in history is called the Golden Rule. Treat others as you wish to be treated. But what would it mean to extend this idea to the environment? John Perkins calls the result a life economy, living in ways that foster mutually beneficial relationships between human activities and the environment, driven by the goal of maximizing long-term benefits for both people and planet. Each Life Economy podcast episode features a significant leader who is working toward this goal. We take a deep dive into the values and experiences that drive their work, the transformations they're working toward, and the ways that listeners can succeed at similar initiatives in their own life. Our guest today is Inessa Areye, Chief Strategy Officer at the organization Buffalo Grid. Vanessa is a social entrepreneur focused on cultural strategy, developing frameworks, innovative spaces, dialogue, ecosystems, and connections. Since July 2020, she's held the role of Chief Strategy Officer at Buffalo Grid. Buffalo Grid works on connectivity, bringing digital prosperity to unconnected and underserved people with their StreamSpot Plus technology and service. From 2011 to 2015, Vanessa served as Head of Cultural Affairs for Mexico in the United Kingdom. She was Project Director of Yoko Ono's Imagine Peace for the London 2012 Games and has been a regular contributor to Vogue Mexico and Vogue Latin America since 2014. Vanessa is currently a trustee of Fashion Revolution UK, a global movement that conserves and restores the environment and values people over growth and profit. Until recently, she was a board member of Remake.World in the US, a community of fashion lovers, women rights advocates, and environmentalists who are on a mission to change the industry's practices that are harmful to people and our planet. It's a pleasure to introduce Vanessa Areye, and now I give the floor to the host for today's episode, Grace Okafor.
Vanessa, welcome to the podcast. We are super, super excited to have you on. And I know we're going to talk about a variety of different things today. But to start, I want to begin by gaining a better sense of the deeper values and experiences that underlie you as a person and your work. So I did a little bit of digging, and I know that you shared in the past that you would describe yourself as a citizen of the world. Can you talk about the experiences that have shaped this personal identity and how they've informed the tenets of your life?
Sure. Thank you, Grace. Actually, first of all, delighted to be here with you. That's a really interesting question because I come from a provincial city in the north of Mexico called Juarez, the border with El Paso, Texas. And I say that I became a citizen of the world because I was very curious as a child and as a young, you know, as a youth, we had the opportunity to travel. So I was always looking and very curious. But when I was 13 years old, the situation of Juarez changed. The narco situation started becoming evident and security was an issue. So my parents sent me to boarding school. And when I got to boarding school, it was very funny because I was with girls from India and from all over the world. I mean, American, European, Latinas, Africans, Asians, everything. It was just an amazing all-girls school of girls that were all still friends to date from all over the world. But it was a funny thing because I remember arriving and, you know, there was girls from Dubai or London, Paris, and they would say, you know, where are you from? And I would say, Juarez. And they would say, oh, where is that? I would say, Mexico. And they're like, I say, okay, Chihuahua, because it's my state. And the first question I got, which was obvious, is like, oh my God, are the dogs from there? And, you know, it kind of opened the way to conversation. But I was very early on exposed to living with girls from other cultures. And I actually, my essay for my university application to Babson was something along the lines that if we were all friends, we wouldn't need borders. So I think I've always been an idealist. I've always been very curious and love talking to people and learning about their culture, about their homes, their lives, their history. And that's why I've became a citizen of the world, and someone who is open to different cultures, different ideas, different values. But I think the rooting of it is my parents showing me the world as a child and a young youth. We traveled a lot. And my father used to make us study the history of the country the whole year before traveling to the country. So if we were going to Egypt, we would study the history of Egypt the whole year and then go to London to the British Museum to see what was happening there, you know, what all the artifacts, and then we would go see Egypt, for example. So it was a remarkable way to grow up. And I think it was what my parents offered me was the world, especially coming from a very provincial town in the north of Mexico, a small city.
It sounds like you had a really amazing opportunity to have such an immersive experience with culture regularly and that exposure. I'm curious because, again, you know, when we're thinking about tenets and, you know, you mentioned curiosity and this, you know, curiosity to continue learning and absorbing things like a sponge. So the tenets that we live by are very much underpinned by core values. And I was interested to know if you could name some that guide you in your personal and professional life.
Definitely. And I actually just did an exercise with a group of young social entrepreneurs in Central America a few weeks ago, where I led an exercise to help them identify their values. And it was very interesting because when I did it with someone, I thought my number one value has to be consistency. And when I actually did the exercise, my number one value is trust, and then curiosity and creativity. And fun is up there too. It's kind of up in my top five. So, you know, those are it. I mean, trust is number one, curiosity and creativity. And they are actually the values that drive every aspect of my life, whether it's my personal life, my family life, my work life, my friends. It's always based on those three criteria.
That's amazing. So we're going to pivot a little bit and shift gears to talk about your career, past and present. So as noted in your bio, you're involved in major ways within the fashion industry and still are to a degree. But recently, within the last couple of years, your focus has shifted a bit to largely include and support tech-based ventures. Can you talk a little bit about that and what sparked this move from fashion to tech?
They're still related. Let me, you know, I still see them as related because my interest in fashion or my participation in fashion with supporting those boards and those organizations is more about human rights, is about transparency. It's about the environment. So the entire production system or the production cycle from farming practices to when the garment is hanging. I think it is still related. I've now been focused with this company, Buffalo Grid, which I've known about since 2012, when they were a bicycle generator project in Uganda to support coffee farmers. And I thought it was fascinating the fact that they had designed this bicycle generator so coffee farmers could call back their farm to be able to get quantities that were available or check market prices to not lose sales. So this is a, you know, international coffee, specialty coffee buyers would go to Uganda or to Ghana, and the farmers walk for days. Their phones don't have charge by the time they get there, or they have to walk for hours to charge it. And everybody was losing opportunities of great business. So one of the co-founders, who's a coffee trader of Buffalo Grid, met Daniel, our CEO, and they together designed this bicycle generator, which was not going to work because nobody has, you know, a couple of thousand excess calories to burn a day to charge four phones. So they started looking further into solar powered units. And there was a lot of R&D in Africa. And then the project moved to India. They've received great accolades and grants and support throughout the last years. And I just found the resilience and the commitment to find a solution that would work for the most vulnerable or underserved. It's relentless from both those gentlemen. And I always found it very inspiring. So when they invited me to join the team as a chief strategy officer, it was a blessing. It was almost like, you know, given from the universe. I found it to be a great honor. And I've been working with them since. And it's a remarkable opportunity. It feeds my curiosity. It also requires a lot of creativity to develop the business strategy, the revenue streams, the relationships with the content partners. But being a citizen of the world, of course, I'm able to connect a lot of dots that might not be obvious. And it's worked out very well for all of us.
That is fantastic. I know that that was a big portion of what we wanted to talk about in this podcast episode, Stream Spot Plus by Buffalo Grid. So we've been in conversation previously. And so within the last few weeks, it's to our knowledge that many of the resources that Stream Spot Plus by Buffalo Grid has developed are finally being released into their respective communities across the world. So I'd be interested to know about the process and what has gone more easily or rapidly than you expected, and where have you faced unexpected challenges?
The unexpected challenge was COVID, without a doubt, because COVID affected the whole supply chain. So we are actually 9 months delayed from our planned deployments. So 9 months delays because of the supply chain problems, COVID, manufacturing closures, the transport system, everything. But right now, as we are recording this podcast, our units are on a flight from the Philippines to Bangladesh. Within the next 10 days, Daniel, our CEO, will be traveling to Bangladesh, and there will be the first deployment of units on the ground with our partnership with Robbie there. But we have a lot of very exciting partners and people that we're working with to bring content, life-changing content, if you ask me, to people who have never and will not in the near future experience digital content and services. So for us, it's very exciting because we mitigate the cost of data. One of our units has a SIM card. It connects to a solar panel, which allows it to run and to charge 10 phones at a time. With that SIM card, this unit connects to the cloud. And connecting to the cloud, we can constantly update a couple of terabytes of content. So that's thousands of hours of video and audio and everything. We're constantly updating content from education, health, information, entertainment, and sports. So it's an offline streaming platform that is going to bring what we call digital prosperity, but most importantly, digital skills to people that don't have them, wouldn't be able to gain them because they cannot afford normal data as it is, let alone charge a phone. So with that, but COVID has been the greatest challenge we have faced. We expect it to be already generating metrics and having hubs operating for at least 7 months right now. And we will be deploying, as I said, within the next 10 days to 2 weeks. It just depends how quickly the units arrive in Bangladesh because there's no direct flights from the factory where they're coming from.
So when I'm thinking about Stream Spot Plus by Buffalo Grid, sustainable development seems to be a key concept in the project itself. I'm curious as to how do you understand genuine sustainability and what are some of the ways that your work with Stream Spot Plus by Buffalo Grid is contributing to sustainable development?
Are we talking about the SDGs?
Yes, we're actually in fact talking about the SDGs. Okay. We can touch on that, but also in general, more broadly speaking about sustainable development. It doesn't have to be particularly tied to SDG.
Broadly speaking about the SDGs, depending on the content that we feature, a Stream Spot Plus can comply or support 14 out of the 17 SDGs. Even as far as water and sanitation, we're looking at we are developing a project in Bangladesh for sanitation workers. And, just by bringing education content that they require, being able to run surveys for them to do check-ins and reporting, because if you can imagine, sanitation workers in the country work at night when the municipalities aren't open. So the timing doesn't necessarily work to support their work. So our hubs, our units, our Stream Spot Pluses aren't just an offline streaming platform for the unconnected and underserved, but they actually can serve a greater purpose for particular deployments to support certain demographics. So for example, in Bangladesh, we have the sanitation workers. We're looking at a project in Central America at the moment to support the migrants when they are crossing a certain area of the continent, where we can actually help them check in throughout the route into different into the following units to find out what are their legal rights on the ground, where are the medical services, about education for their children. So it's walking a difficult journey with them. The majority or a lot of them have smartphones with them. So you can give continuity to streamlining and making easier a lot of the things that shouldn't be difficult for somebody who's already going through a very such an adverse situation. So those are the SDGs from our perspective. It depends. It's meant on our content. And of course, being a solar powered unit, also we've got that part.
Yeah, that's really incredible about the kind of problem solving almost framework that you guys are operating on. I'm curious as to when StreamSpot Plus was kind of being developed and the whole entire mapping of the intention and the problem solution and the solutions that Buffalo Grid wanted to solve. Did your colleagues have this kind of systemic approach in mind as you developed your organizational model? Like, this was the intent to say, we want to be able to tick off this many SDGs as a result of our...
Absolutely not. This Buffalo Grid started to bring charge to support farmers in rural areas in developing countries. The whole content idea was a project that was born just before COVID when we were running our trials in India and testing our units. Actually, one of those units is in the Design Museum in London. It won an award and it is in the permanent collection of the Design Museum in London. The new one is much better because the new one is sealed, is hermetic, it's water resistant, it's dust proof, heat proof, but most importantly, insect proof. The unit that is in the collection when it was in India, it broke down one of those units. And when it came back to the Royal College of Art, where this company was born, they found there was a nest in an ant nest inside of it. Because of the frequency or the heat, the ants had gotten in to build the nest and it pretty much broke the unit. So we had to redesign, and that was one of the good things. So did we have a systemic approach to where we are now? No, we used the time of the COVID and the delays to actually improve on the design, whatever we could on the design of the software, the design of our program, talking to our potential partners. We work with TechFugees, the organization, and we've had endless hours of conversations with refugees on the ground in different camps in Uganda and in Kenya, and also some Syrian refugees in Jordan, to really identify what it is that they need. So the only thing that we might be able to say that has been systemic about this process is the human connection that is required to develop a program that will work for a particular community. It's simple technology, but advanced technology. The design that has gone, research and design that has gone into it is 7 years of research and design, but it's very easy to use. It's highly scalable, low cost, but it only works if the content that we provide provides what people need and want on the ground. And only by having a grassroots approach, a very human approach, can that happen. So, we have the potential of doing the sanitation worker project. So we become as knowledgeable as we can about sanitation workers on the country. We connect with academics. We connect with sanitation workers themselves, with people within government, to figure out what it is that would best serve them. And so we pivot very quickly, but that's also an advantage of being a small company with a small, very committed team that has been working together for a while.
Absolutely. I mean, that is something that we're really not seeing across the board, of that kind of collaboration between communities and asking them and doing that kind of qualitative investigating and saying, what do you need? How do we support you? How do we provide that? Just in general, kind of with the services that are the hubs, I'm curious as to why is the method that you guys are choosing to expand digital and internet access through solar panels a really effective way of using tech to close the digital divide?
So first of all, we're not offering internet. We are an offline streaming platform, and I have to be very clear and straight about that. What we're doing is we're bridging the digital divide because we are we're making digital skills accessible in literacy. There are four main barriers to connectivity. The first one is the most obvious one, is affordability. Data is incredibly expensive in a lot of developing countries. India, not so much. But if you're looking at Bangladesh, I believe it's 72 cents per gigabyte. No, yes, per gigabyte. Nigeria is about 88 cents per gigabyte. In our commercial deployments, we offer our service for $1 per month to download any of the content on the hubs. But the charge and the streaming is always for free. So when you look at it, we mitigate the cost of data. One SIM card in one unit serves an average of about 600 repeat users, making it incredibly affordable for a community or for an area of a peri-urban city or something like that. So it mitigates the cost. I think that's what's very interesting about the work that we're doing. So affordability is covered. Second of all, digital skills. Our units have a screen on them, and that screen teaches you how to charge your phone. Very simply animated, very accessible, very little wording, a lot of iconography. So we've got a lot of iconography on the screen, and it can also show you how to download the app directly from the unit, which means you don't even need data to download the app. So the entire experience is free. The next thing that comes along with it is we provide a lot of our content partners' content. So we've got digital literacy, you've got language learning programs, coding for kids and for girls, Open University, for example, for adult learning, entrepreneurial courses for youth, Sesame Workshop, for example, is a partner in various countries. So education for smaller children, from internet safety to hygiene. So we can actually support education across generationally. So the literacy is the next one. And the final barrier is infrastructure. So fiber optics are not going to get to these places anytime soon. And most of these places are underserved in terms of main power or not served at all. So our units run off of a solar panel and depend on a SIM card. But our units are also compatible with the satellite data. So we can also mitigate the cost of satellite data, which is another project that we're exploring at the moment in Afghanistan, which is quite exciting.
That is really, really incredible. I'm just seeing all the different dimensions of how the structure, like the infrastructural issues, and then also the education access is really being solved through the use of the hubs. I'm curious as to what are your long-term goals for scaling? Because clearly the solar panels offer a lot of flexibility in terms of not having to build all these different networks to connect mm-hmm. and give people internet access. So if you could speak a little bit to that.
Well, for us, scalability means number of units out on the ground. That is what our objective is. The more units on the ground, the more digital prosperity in the world. It's simple math. 4 billion people have never experienced the internet. That's half of the world's population, which to us might seem insane. I mean, we continued living semi-normal lives throughout COVID because we can continue working, our kids could get educated, whatever it is. 500 million people never experienced the internet. 3.4 billion of them live in places with 3 or 4G. So for us, it's inconceivable that they're not connected. For me personally, it makes absolutely no sense. So our whole objectives, our long-term plan is, can we mitigate the cost of data to bring all of these people into digital prosperity, provide education, digital skills, which can subsequently lead to better lives. It supports sustainable development. There's a lot of programs in refugee camps that provide employment for refugees that are remarkable. So they're working with a data scientist, you know, like when you're checking out of a purchase that you say, what number is it? Or these are bicycles. They can actually do that to earn a salary that's paid by mobile money. And they're earning very good livings in some refugee camps doing that, but they need to learn how to do that. So how can we support in that? We mitigate the cost of the courses. We can put all the videos of all the courses and all the training on our hubs. And then the only investment that they have to do is the data cost for them to actually do the work. So there's another program that works with refugees in Kakuma in Kenya, who he does every Saturday a 1-hour course to teach them how to do digital marketing and how to go find clients on LinkedIn or Twitter. And there's refugees making over $1,000 a month of income doing this kind of work, But the course is 1 hour long a day. And if you consider the cost of data in Kenya, then it's not exactly viable. So we can put the courses in our hubs. They can get the training, they can get the experience. And then the expenditure is only actually doing the work that they need to do.
Wow. We're really thinking about a complete overhaul of how people are accessing and interacting with technology in almost remote places or places where the financial infrastructure isn't there to provide that for them. So this is really incredible work. I'm going to pivot a little bit and talk about your leadership and specific visions that you have. So the first thing that I want to address is how you've had a kind of less than typical career. So for the majority of people, you know, who want to be in leadership, for example, if they want to be a doctor, you know, they are on the pre-med track in undergrad, then they go to medical school, do a residency, become a doctor. And it's a very set path from the start. Mm-hmm. You, however, have dabbled in a variety of work, from fashion to cultural attaché, tech, and right now within sustainable development and tech at the intersection of that with Student Spotless by Buffalo Grid. So you've very much been around the world talking to people across different industries. And, you know, I'm expecting that these experiences have influenced how you navigate your leadership to a degree. And I wanted to ask, how do these experiences inform the current work that you do with Stream Spot Plus and your leadership within the organization?
Let's just say that each and every single one led to the next. If we go back to the very earlier days of my career, I finished university. I was at Babson College. I graduated. I moved to New York. I got a job with an amazing woman who gave me an opportunity. I met her under the pumpkin at the Halloween haunted house of Madison Square Gardens that she used to produce. And she gave me a job on the spot in New Jersey. And I lived in New York. So I had to reverse commute. She gave me an opportunity to engage with CEOs of companies like Michelin Tires and AT&T Solutions. I was managing and helping her with her accounts. And I was sitting with one of the programmers on speakerphone. And they had to write down what I had to answer to them about technical questions because I knew absolutely nothing. But this woman took a chance and supported me at the beginning of my career. I learned an incredible amount from her. But also I learned that you have to give people opportunities. From then on, I traveled to Madrid. I moved to Madrid to organize a cultural event for an NGO called FEMAP from the north of Mexico, but they have various hospitals. They brought microcredit lending to Mexico back in the late 90s, this was early 2000. And I produced single-handedly an event that hosted about 6,000 people a day in a Mexican market in the train station in Madrid. It lasted a week. We had an art exhibition with a soprano singer singing in Nahuatl, which is a native Mexican tongue, in the Círculo de Bellas Artes in Madrid. And you know, the press pack was like this, the result of the radio, TV, newspapers, and everything. This is before anything was digital. And I was 23 years old when I did that. And I can say that I'm still very close and very friendly with most of the people that I collaborated and worked with during that project. I then went on and married. I had my children. I had that life experience that was remarkable. And then when my divorce happens, when I got divorced, I moved to London. When I arrived in London, the then ambassador of Mexico gave me the opportunity to become cultural attaché, which for me had always been my dream job, I must confess. And it was the most amazing opportunity after not having worked for 10 years, for 8.5, 9 years of because of my marriage, my siblings and my family life, to come back into the world representing Mexico's culture in London. I mean, it's like everybody's dream. And I had been on acquisitions committee of the Tate and part of the Whitechapel patrons group and various other arts, contemporary art organizations. So for the ambassador, it was a natural fit. And I had an amazing 5-year run, came in with a tiny, tiny, tiny budget of $14,000 a year. And when I left, when I left my position, the year of Mexico started, which was a couple of million in budget for that program. So the year of Mexico in the UK, and that was a program that I established. I left everything organized and then it was implemented and very beautifully was invited to attend a lot of the openings. by the institutions to be witness of the collaborative work of so many people from Mexico, from the UK, from the artists, from the creatives. So it's always been about collaboration for me. I think leadership is about collaboration. It's about curiosity, listening to different ideas. But I really believe that my strongest quality is connecting dots. I can see synergies and I can see connections in the long term that are not necessarily obvious to people. So, but they're all interrelated. You know, the NGOs for fashion, it's really about human rights. At the end of the day, it's really about human rights. Culture is almost about human rights because it's the most subversive form of expression. Even in oppressive environments, you can put a painting or an image that means so much to so many people if they know how to look. So I think that culture, fashion, the work that I'm doing now, tech as well, it's one thing has naturally led to the other. And now that we're looking at content, it's all about storytelling. So the entire story has come together, I really do believe, to put me in this place where this is where I can add most value at the moment to humanity in a way.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely sounds like a natural, organic progression and how these things really are threaded into one another. So again, kind of revisiting this idea of most folks following a set path, do you believe that, you know, these experiences should be a rite of passage for leaders more generally? I mean, there's so much that one can learn from being able to step out of their kind of bubble and learn from a different culture and a different way of looking at things.
I beg to differ. So I don't think it's fair to call those things bubbles. And I think everybody's journey is individual. I would just say that getting out of your comfort zone, even if you're going to med school and you take all the steps, you know, maybe be curious about alternative medicine to see how that might complement what you're doing. A little bit of curiosity with something that is interrelated. But it's everybody has a different path. My parents used to ask me, you know, where are you going to be in 6 months? Where are you going to be in 1 year? Where are you going to be in 5 years? And I always said, I don't know, but I'm going to be doing something to make a difference. And having fun. I always did say that. Fun has always been on the top five of my values since I was very young. And I think that's the truth. Everybody's concept of fun or enjoyment is completely different. As long as you're doing something that fulfills you, as long as you're doing something that allows you to grow as a person within your bubble, and every so often you're willing to get out of your comfort, then I think we can all expand and evolve in a way to further connect. Because if we just stay in our little bubbles, we're not going to connect with anyone. We're not going to grow as individuals or our knowledge. We would all be parallel lines. So if we step out of our little comfort zone every so often, I think that more happens. That's my only opinion about these linear paths to life. I don't believe in linear. I don't even think time is linear.
I think that's a fantastic insight. And I absolutely do agree. You know, when you're opening yourself up to the possibilities, you're opening up yourself to different connections and growth as a community, not just by yourself. So that's really amazing, Vanessa. So let's revisit the ideas of tenets and values that we discussed earlier. Beneath all the details that you're responsible for at Stream Spot Plus by Buffalo Grid, can you give us some sense of the core vision that drives you? And then what are the deepest goals that you bring to your role as CSO?
Oh, gosh, I just want to see these out there. This is all I want to see because I can see it in my mind. I can feel it. I can see what it does. I have a hub. Once I felt the hub, it was even more real. My driver is actually making that happen. And I don't miss one potential conversation, one introduction. We always, if we find something interesting, we will write to them. We will say, hey, this is what we're doing. And just trying to find, and you know, some of the relationships we've been nurturing for 6 years, even before I joined the team with Daniel, there was some relationships and some introductions that I did 6 years ago to him. Now, some of the relationships with partnerships we've signed are 2 years old since the very early days of me having joined the team. Of course, the 9 month delay in delivery of our hubs played a role, but 2 years is still a long time. I'm not really sure how I can answer that. My vision is just every single day, you know, more partners, bigger. The only thing holding us back is financing for how many hubs we have on the ground. You know, we have our commercial deployments, which we have our capital allocated to those. And then we have our humanitarian projects where we are contractors and service providers. So we do joint applications with organizations, multilaterals, NGOs, even with the private sector. In one country, we're looking at a collaboration as a private sector, or we're even considering some franchises in other countries. So my day to day is exactly that. How can we deploy most hubs on the ground? Where will we have the most impact? And it always goes back to the grassroots, which is wonderful. So the day is filled with engaging with remarkable people, people with tremendous resilience, people with amazing values, people with some of the most extraordinary life stories of success or of suffering, and coming out of the suffering and helping others. So I just consider myself to be very blessed, and that's what drives me every day.
That's an amazing just way to put it. And obviously, your passion is carried through. We can hear it in your voice and the types of work that you're doing. And this is just very inspiring, Vanessa. So we always end each episode by asking a question about hope. And I'm sure that you think about this as you continue to do the work where the details are rapidly evolving and there are a lot of unknowns. So the question is, Vanessa, what gives you hope?
Well, I'm going to bring it to what's going on in the world right now, what's happened with Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And what gives me hope is witnessing a couple of groups that have rallied together to support Ukrainian refugees and to find jobs for them, accommodation, transport, visas. This morning, there was a conversation. I mean, there's 210 people in a chat to bring Ukrainians to Portugal. There's 18,000 jobs that have been created in the whole structure to bring them to Portugal from one WhatsApp group with really committed people. That gives me hope. But what I hope is that that feeling continues and that sense of human responsibility towards one another continues. And it's not just one of those, okay, we were in crisis, so we all acted accordingly to support one another, and we're going to go back to just thinking about ourselves. That gives me hope, but I hope that that continues throughout, that we actually learn and move on to the next level. It's like the African proverb says, you know, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And that is it. That is the ticket.
That is incredible. Thank you so much, Vanessa. I'm going to give the floor over to Philip, who will close us out.
If you'd like to learn more about Vanessa and the amazing work she's doing, make sure to follow the organization on Instagram. Just look up at StreamSpotPlus for breaking news and updates. Thank you to our audience for tuning in, and be sure to be on the lookout for our next episode coming out soon.